Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for coming. I'm glad you're here. Let's get into it. So I'd like to start by expressing my purpose here on my show. I know if you're a longtime listener and have been following this, this might start to become redundant, which is why I don't use a script. But I need to consistently remind even myself of what I'm doing and why I think it's so important to continue doing it for myself and perpetuating doing things for others, whatever your thing might be. Everybody's different, yet I think at the heart and center of all of our souls lies something very similar, and I don't even think it's expressly human. I think we are interdependent and belong inherently in our natural world, even though we have surrounded ourselves with all of the artificial constructs of the human imagination and whatever we can machinize and build. As humans, we use our intellect to solve problems. We measure and collect data, and using this data, we predict what things could be. And because of our intellect and because of our ability to manipulate our environment, a dramatic amount of the time, we are correct. I personally think that this has brought us into the modern age that we have. Yet, I think that we forget our connection to being an animal or a creature or a consumer, and not just of material goods. We are consuming time. We're consuming our own time. From the minute we were born, we've been moving step by step towards the eventual demise of this body. And I'm not trying to scare you, but I think it's important to recognize the impermanence of this life. And I've never once thought that I had to be permanent, even though I had a lot of fear of death when I was younger. I don't hold much fear about it now. And even though I'm still murky about what is after this life, it is because of my own spiritual considerations and the way that I have started to build my own appreciation of reality that I can even be comfortable with dark topics like death and consider it often. So that's the first leg of what I'm trying to do here on the Gingerbread Man, is that I want to motivate others to want to build their own spiritualism and to seek creatively their own system of being. And even if you have a lot of hesitation against the big R word, which is religion, and spiritualism, which has a lot of dark characters and mixed motivations, and when people are seeking happiness, other people can take advantage of that. And because of this, and because of the people who have been taken advantage of using some of these messages, there's a lot of hesitation to even approach some of these things in a materialistic world such as my own country. There's lots of people who are religious following books, Yet I question how many people are forming a relationship with their world and their idea of God or non-gods, even science, even in scientism. Are we fully appreciating what this information means, or are we simply regurgitating data points that other people have given us because we trust them? Do you see any parallels between the scientistic journey and those sitting in church looking for spiritual salvation? Both are seeking some meaning-forming device to make sense of the world. And I want to try to motivate you to be excited about it, because it's wonderfully beautiful that we have this life, which for all sense and purpose could be an accident, that we can even consider it, that we can even consider ourselves. If we are an accident and we weren't created and there was no architect or watchmaker, isn't it amazing that we can consider ourselves because of an accident? It shakes me. And the second leg that I want to push in the gingerbread man is love. I see love as being beyond a conditioned form of attachment to any object or person, even this physical body and the thoughts and sense of self that the physical machinations of my brain produce that I can witness. Love is the closest thing that I can see divinity in. And love is close to that spark that I think is shared by the world and everything in it. I think that we are born with love, and I think that we can choose to spread compassion and bring others into the space of love that was already inherently there. And I don't know if that makes any sense, and it might not make any sense right now, but I think that spark is indestructible and invincible. And I think from that seat of love is where we observe this reality and all the things that happen. And I'm starting to think that that doesn't expressly mean that it is illusionary. It's not fake. This. And we don't need to put this aside for some sense of what's after. It's really important to be fully involved in this, if there's an after. And there might not be. All right. So before I get into some really deep shit, which if you can stick with me for a while, I hope you'll enjoy that, just to get your taste buds salivating. But I've been coming to a close with Mr. John Stuart Mill and his ideas of liberty. So I'd like to speak about that for just a little bit. Liberty, I feel, at least from reading this essay, is the question of how we deem what people can and can't do. This is what makes a person free. Whereas if we take away somebody's liberty, they have no freedom. This has been dictated in constitutions as rights. What is the rights of man? And has even been discussed with non-anthropomorphic entities with the rights of nature, such as natural parks and the safety of endangered animals. So humans have always been concerned about their freedom. And for the past 3 centuries, the United States has been on a warpath to push its own democratic ideal of what freedom is because of the decision that free thought and free voice is better than no free thought or free voice, which is a large portion of what Mr. John Stuart Mill discusses in his book, is what people can and can't say. And honestly, one of the crown jewels of my country that is elucidated often even by this production here, because many of the things that I talk about are not respected or even have a legal foundation to speak about. And I have the ability to talk about whatever I want because of this idea of free speech. Yet, our words can hurt people too. So, Stuart Mill heavily depicts the individual and society, where society is this mystical magnetism that holds groups together when we accept and agree to partake. If we are part of society, we agree that some limitations are allowed upon us to protect society. This could be the social contract of Thomas Hobbes, but it's unspoken, and it can even be witnessed within the family. To be part of the family, you have to partake with the family. There are chores. There are responsibilities. There are unsaid requirements that might not even be noticed on the witnessable plane. So, society is this group mind, this Übermensch, which is a real thing. It thinks and it breathes and it evolves. And it's like the baby and the creation of every action that we do as a community. So, for John Stuart Mill, we have liberty to do anything that we please as long as it only affects ourselves. But if we do something that affects somebody else, even through inaction, it is also our responsibility to take on the social consequences that those are. Yet, if our action only affects ourselves, then the only thing that society can do is advise, instruct, or avoid. So, the penal consequences of a self-directed action don't make sense. He even described it financially. When we set limitations on, say, a substance or a poison, such as tobacco, it's very understood that tobacco causes damage and can harm and kill people. Yet, with complete liberty, according to this philosophy, a smoker is only damaging themselves unless they're, say, smoking in the home, in which case the smoke could hurt their family through secondhand, and if they have children, even more. But if the government decides to artificially raise the prices, which is something that's been happening across many different states. Just 3 years ago, cigarettes only cost like maybe $4 to $5 for a pack. Now they're $10. That's doubled. I don't smoke anymore. But at the rate that I used to smoke, I'm not sure that I could afford to do it anymore. It would be far more difficult to keep up that habit. So this only affects those who can't afford it, though. You see what I'm saying? So in this case, raising the price is only setting a cap on the impoverished. So if you can afford to smoke, you can afford to have that. And that's almost governing the populace like children. Because if you don't make enough money, then obviously you're not responsible enough to hurt yourself either. I know that sounds kind of murky, but what I'm getting at is that liberty and these concepts of freedom are not cut and dry. They're not as simple as that I used to think. I used to push a very anarchistic ideal where I would have said that anybody should be able to do whatever they damn well please as long as it doesn't affect anybody else. But one of the counter arguments to this is, say, if you're sitting in a theater and you yell fire and everybody runs and stampedes, within the chaos and the damage, somebody could be maimed and hurt. So even words should be carefully considered, even when we have the freedom to utter whatever we wish. So I'll be thinking carefully about the messages that I push. We're all walking each other home, and I'd like to be a beneficial caretaker and be a good influence on all those in my social circle. I want our society to thrive. I patiently wait for compassion to grow. And I think that that is easier in a climate of liberty. And I think that my country, even though I've criticized it often, has a lot of these ideals. And so, rather than demonize it, the government, I would like to personally say that I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the dissonance. I'm grateful for the ability to disagree. I'm grateful for the counter-argument and the counter-culture. And I will unceasingly be grateful for any and every person who disagrees with me and the person sitting on the other side of the table whom I'm arguing with. Thank you. Speaking of which, if you would like to email me, my email address is available in the show notes. I would love to have a discourse with you. We could talk about whatever you want, especially if you disagree with me. Give me a counter argument. Tell me something different. Let's talk. All right. That's enough ramblings about philosophy for tonight. Now I want to discuss some big movements that have happened in my psyche over the past couple days. As many of you know, and I speak about a lot, the closest thing that I have to a spiritual mentor right now is a substance called dimethyltryptamine, or DMT, which is a classic psychedelic that's been used since the 70s alongside other chemicals such as LSD and psilocybin. I am not giving any advice. I'm not promoting or advising anybody to pursue or do this chemical. I think it can be dangerous, and I don't think it's for everyone. However, within my own circumstances, of which I'm very careful, I have been given immense insight from a space in between and slightly separate from the standard waking consciousness. And the subjectivity of any experience is keenest to the eye of the beholder. So yet again, I'm not pushing anybody to follow me. I am purely sharing some experiences and some rationalizations that I've gathered from these experiences. And I want to share them with you because I have gained some bit of information that I do not feel that I could have gotten, at least where I am typically. I think that many other brave and enduring psychonauts and explorers who have quested without chemicals, I think many have seen the same exact place, such as some of the pieces that I'm reading within the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which has been relabeled as The Psychedelic Experience by Timothy Leary. Whilst reading some of these depictions of death, I have been eerily reminded of some of these altered states of consciousness. If we have a microscope to study the flex and the bends of our own minds, within John Stuart Mill's idea of liberty, I can't see how simply glimpsing the prism of ourselves hurts anyone in any way, shape, or form. I feel safe within my own ethical code, knowing that my explorations are beneficial for me, which is why I will proceed to share with you. A while ago, I went into a voyage with DMT, where I took my accustomed dose, I saw my general sights, and I enjoyed, but then I felt driven to pursue further, and so I pushed it once, twice, and then a third time. Within a very short time period, I was propelled drastically far away from typical being. A voice appeared in my mind, perhaps from a memory, perhaps me, that said, "You know, if you close your eyes, you can still see, right?" For some reason, I just was like, okay. So I clasped my eyes shut tightly. And surprisingly, even while I felt my eyes closed, I could sense and clearly see everything around me. Directly in front of me grew a crystalline and indecipherably complex, beautiful thing. And I saw it, and I felt seen. And as soon as I felt the connection of being seen, it evaporated. though simple, I felt so moved by this experience. And I've never seen with my eyes closed before. I've never had such a clear vision while being so lucid. And the experience has stayed with me. And the only thing that I could think was that I was seeing the God within me, that I was looking at my own soul. It was very close to some sort of out-of-body experience. And I have dabbled and dallied in this universe with this thing, this chemical, so many times, and I've never witnessed this. And I felt so lucky and grateful to be able to see myself and to see God, because this experience just completely made it concrete that I think every living soul and every single bit of life, to me, doesn't feel as accidental anymore. And I think that you, the person listening to me right now, I really, for me, for my subjective being, I believe you are divine and you have a God within you. I do. That's what that taught me. So, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time and your attention. It's really important to care about yourself and to have love for yourself. To know where you are. To be able to admire your efforts. And I'm grateful that I have such a charming being and such a charming God here with me, considering my thoughts. Now, I hope that you'll go consider yours. Let's go see how Odin is doing this week.
Hi, people. This is me and the gingerbread man.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing, kid?
Good.
How was your day?
Good.
Yeah? You having fun?
Yeah.
What'd you do today?
I was thinking.
What are you thinking about?
We should change our show name.
To what?
To Mr. Cookie.
Mr. Cookie? Why?
I just don't know.
Because gingerbread cookies?
Yes. They're cookies.
I guess I see it.
Because they both have frosting and stuff.
They do have frosting and stuff. Oof. So, do you know that you're special?
Yes.
Do you know that you are important?
Yes.
Do you know how amazing I think you are?
Yes.
Do you want other people to feel that way?
Yes.
So, do you know our kindness and our compassion helps other people feel better?
Mm-hmm.
You see how much power we have?
Mm-hmm.
So, from me and Odin Bear...
I'm not Odin Bear. You're Odin Bear.
Hope you have a great week, and we love you.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.